Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram. No Marcus, at least for our first segment today. He's going to be joining us a little bit down the line. But joining me per usual, my master of all things sound, Maxine.
How's it going?
And back with us after just way too long, hell of too long, the Golden State beat writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, a man who attends every single Warriors practice, shoot around end game, and a guy who has to be tired of my voice at this stage. Since we recorded a podcast last week and took a social distance walk not 2 days ago, Mr. Connor Letourneau. What's going on, Connor?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, guys. Always enjoyable to join the pod. You know, also Kevin Durant's favorite pod. So, you know, it's got to be good.
You know, we actually have a new requirement where you have to mention that 3 to 4 times through the course of a podcast. And you have to pretend like you're not trying to do it. Like you just have to come up with it randomly. So, Maxine, make sure we've marked it. That's one, man. But we've got another 3 in front of us, all right?
Noted.
Yeah. Boys, this is kind of unusual. So, quick shot behind the scenes. We were planning on taking this week off. We had like a 2-hour marathon last week. I can't imagine that you guys want to listen to our voice anymore. But during the off time, I was going through a whole bunch of Warriors articles, and I ran into one from Connor that got me so interested and so fired up that we dusted off the mics and came in hot even when we weren't supposed to. The title of that article is this, quote, "How NBA Shutdown Helps Warriors' Chances of Landing Giannis Antetokounmpo." So you can see why it fired me up, man. And before I even ask you about the article, Connor, let me ask both of you this. Am I crazy, or outside of Michael Jordan, is Giannis the best possible addition to this Golden State Warriors team? If you had a time machine and could pick from any player out of any NBA era.
I think so. Because he provides them something they haven't really had in a while. The Warriors don't have an elite athlete, and he's the definition of that. I mean, he's called a freak for a reason, the Greek freak for a reason. And I think they have the floor spacers. They have all that. They need someone who can just get a bucket at any given moment. And that's the thing I think they really struggled with after Kevin left, is they don't have that guy who can just enforce his will offensively. You know, Steph is a different type of offensive dynamo, so to speak. And so I think if you brought Giannis in and paired him with someone like Steph, there's no way for a defense to counter. And the key thing to me is that Giannis is, what, 25 years old? And so he's just now starting to hit his prime years. And Steph's now in his early 30s, as is Clay and Draymond. And Giannis is a guy who can lead the Warriors into that next iteration, you know, into that post-Steph era, and, you know, potentially help ensure that they can have a sustained successful period. I was going to say sustained dynasty, but I think it's more realistic to just say sustained success, a la the Spurs and what they were able to do going from a guy like Tim Duncan to Kawhi Leonard.
If it's Giannis who the baton gets passed to, I feel like dynasty is probably pretty appropriate. I mean, he's like one of the only dudes. I mean, we love Steph. That's been said so many times. But if Steph was passing that baton to almost anybody else, and I would drink the Kool-Aid and come up with excuses about why I love that other guy too. But we can say right now, if it's Antetokounmpo who gets that baton, there's not really that much of a step down at all. And let me put it this way. And let me phrase it as a thank you to you, Connor, for pushing this out into the universe and giving me some content to take my mind off. But I was so fired up about the possibility of this happening that I was reading this actually when I was in a 7-Eleven. And the reason I remember that is because I got so involved in the damn article that I didn't pull up my mask And by the time I got to the front of the line, everybody in that store hated me. I mean, they wanted to lynch me. They literally reminded me that there's, you know, California state laws now that say you have to wear a mask. And I almost told them in advance, how could I remember that? I'm considering the possibility of one of the greatest players ever joining the Warriors, you know? So you know, I digress, but I give credit to you. Let me, do you even use this? Is this a possibility to you? I mean, like, real deal, man. Like, because we've been talking about it, but when I say Giannis to the Warriors, do you view it as a pipe dream? Like, something that we just talk about to keep ourselves entertained, or is, like, something that could happen?
I think it's more realistic than people are willing to admit. And that's, I think that's why I've been kind of trumpeting this harder than anyone. I've written more about this than any other beat writer. And I've talked to people within the organization on a regular basis about this. And it's because I think it's plausible. I think it can realistically happen. I know a lot of people kind of snicker whenever I drop one of these articles and they say, oh, you're just trying to get clicks, which look, that's, I'm not going to say that it's not part of the motivation here, but that's not the driving factor here. I'm writing about this because I think it's real. And I think that it is the most important topic we can discuss right now. What is more important than talking about, you know, what their long-term plan is and what the number one way that they can stay relevant long-term. And the reason I think it's plausible, and I'm not talking about all the things that have been speculated about. People point to him choosing the Warriors in NBA 2K and shouting out Steph as the OG and all those things. And look, it's good that he has a good relationship with Steph. I think it's good that he shares an agency with Steph and he shares the same agent as Seth Curry. Those are all kind of tertiary factors in my mind. But I think that he has a deep respect for the Warriors, what they've built. He knows that they're kind of the blueprint of a winning franchise in the modern NBA right now. And if he doesn't want to play with the Bucks long-term, I think the Warriors are the only team that makes sense. Not only because that's where he would want to go, but also because they can offer the best package in terms of a mix of future assets and guys currently relevant in the NBA. And I think that Bob Myers has been – actually, I know that Bob Myers has been preparing for this opportunity for years. And just like people laughed when we were talking about the possibility of Kevin Durant going to the Warriors a good year or two before he actually did, it's more realistic than people think.
That actually has me really excited. Bram, when you asked if there would be anybody that would be a better fit for the Warriors that maybe since Jordan, it triggered for me the realization that actually, honest to God, I would prefer Giannis to Jordan specifically for this team. I think his chemistry with Steph, the fact that they're both sort of family men, I think that Giannis would fit more seamlessly into our culture and therefore elevate us even more than Jordan would. He is a super dominant player who has a lot of the same cutthroat tendencies that we've seen from Jordan and sort of is more prime for the modern era than sort of the score first Michael Jordan was. And I mean, granted, you know, we saw that Phil was able to get him to be a little bit more of a distributor into the 90s. But I think, I there's nobody that I can think of, period, that I would rather have than Giannis.
Maxine, you know I love you, and I've gone on record with my love for Giannis. Also, let's not be f***ing ridiculous. We're talking about goddamn Michael Jordan. I'm not going to sit idly by and have you say I would pass over Michael Jordan for anybody. I hear what you're saying. I understand it. But at least when I listen back to this podcast, I want to know that I jumped in and said, no, I would still take Jordan over over anybody else. But I'll tell you what, man, I'm burying the lead. So reminding us, here's the title of the article: How NBA Shutdown Helps Warriors' Chances of Landing Giannis. Connor, how does it help it?
So there's a couple of different ways to look at it, but the way I think it's going to impact his decision is that on a basic level, we know, and this is out there, this is well known at this point, that the only way Giannis is going to leave Milwaukee is if he is not confident that they can build a championship caliber team. Now, everything that happened this season pointed in the direction that they can do that. It seemed like they were kind of putting everything together. They have the right coach in place. They have some good complementary pieces and Eric Bledsoe and Chris Middleton and good role guys. And when the NBA shutdown arrived in March, they had the best record
right in
the NBA. And there was every reason to believe they were going to finally be able to get over that hump in the playoffs and at least make the finals, which I think would be enough to lock him down long-term and get him to potentially sign that Supermax extension this summer. But right now, everything is up in the air, right? So we don't know if there's going to be another game played. We don't know if there's going to be any sort of playoff. We don't know even if there is a playoff, what that will look like. Odds are it would be without fans and it would be shortened playoff series, you know, three or five games. And what happens in a three or five game series, just based off odds, right, is that the odds go up significantly for an upset.
Sure.
So you could see an 8 seed upsetting a 1 seed because it's much easier when 2 out of 3 than 4 out of 7. And so just thinking through it logically here, let's say the Bucks are forced to play a 3-game series in the first round and get upset. That's going to up the odds that he at least does. He at least declines the Supermax this summer and just waits out his options. Or he decides that he's not confident in the direction the Bucks are going in. And if no playoff happens at all, then at the very least, the Bucks have missed out on what would have been their best opportunity to win a title since 1971. And we all know putting together a championship team is not an easy thing to do. And there are no guarantees that they're going to be able to replicate this season next season. I personally thought that they were playing beyond their abilities so far this season. And there's no guarantee that they're going to be able to avoid injury, which they completely did this season. They had not one significant injury. Literally everything was going their way. And so I feel like this, in a lot of ways, is the best thing that could have happened to Golden State. Because if everything went as planned and they were able to play the playoffs and make the finals, you can stick a fork in the Warriors' chances right then and there. But this at least gives them some breathing room and gives them an opportunity.
Is the opposite possible? So everything you just said speaks to me, especially a shortened playoff schedule. You know, if we keep calling the playoffs for Milwaukee like a minefield that they would have to negotiate if they want to keep Giannis, then in a shortened playoff schedule, they're looking at way more mines in that field. So I'm on board for it. What about this analysis? And I want you to tell me I'm wrong because it pushes the arrow in the other direction. But, you know, so right now we're in this really weird scenario, this damn pandemic that has all of us worried about our financial futures. And I bet that's probably true in a completely different sense, but at least somehow true for millionaires as well. And what I mean is, let's say they don't play this season again, right? It's just done. They ultimately realize no playoffs, nothing. We're just going to pick up the ball and play again next December. Am I wrong in saying that actually will help Milwaukee? Because if you're Giannis, suddenly you're aware that none of this should be taken for granted. You're not guaranteed a season at any point, and he should probably sign up for the Supermax and guaranteeing him, you know, 5 years of $20 million or whatever the hell it is he's pulling back. You know, am I off to say that? I mean, how does that land?
I'm not sure he's going to look at it in that way. Just based off what we know about Giannis, I'm not sure if he's going to – I can understand the logic there. And honestly, that was initially my thought. But then I've talked to people who are around the Milwaukee organization. I've talked to people – who know him, who are actually around the Warriors organization, and they don't think he's going to process it that way. And I do think just historically, when there's smoke, there's fire, right? We were all speculating about Kevin Durant going and teaming up with Kyrie. And you know, we've talked many times about that conversation the three of us had on this podcast and what happened with that.
Careful, but, yeah, careful. You may get accosted in a locker room by a certain 7-foot superstar.
You know, that was based in something, right? That was based in what we were seeing in terms of the dynamic between those two, in terms of what we knew about Kevin Durant and his motivations. Now, Giannis is a bit more tight-lipped than Kevin Durant, but the everything we've seen between from his interplay with Steph and the Warriors, he's not acting like that with anyone else. You know, he's not
right.
You haven't seen him do that with any other franchise. And he's also hyper aware of the fact that everything he says gets aggregated, and he's not the type of guy to just say something to try to lead someone astray. I think he's a pretty genuine person. So there's something there, you know, this isn't just something we're making up.
And add the fact when they asked Giannis to name his top five players of all time at one point, and he named Steph twice, two times in the space of five players, which all I mean, like that's
too. All time.
Yes.
A lot of historians would not name Steph the top five players of all time.
And almost nobody would name him twice. I wouldn't name him twice. And I think he is my favorite player.
And if you watched the video, he lost kind of track of his thoughts. And so he had almost forgotten that he had mentioned Steph already.
Magic. And I like Steph, and I like...
And there's more than five.
Yeah, that's six. I like Steph also. And I like Damian Lillard also.
But it just shows you how prescient that name is on his mind. You know, it's at the tip of his tongue.
It concerns me a little bit that he lost track of what he was saying after only five people. But let's not jump into that rabbit hole. Who cares? Instead, let's put a bow on it. Over under 25%. What are the chances of him landing in Golden State after you've looked into this issue?
You know, honestly, I would say under, because I would probably put it around 20%.
Okay.
And I know that that doesn't sound high, but it's much higher than the vast majority of people would tell you. I know a lot of other beat writers who would say it's below 10%.
Dude, cue the Dumb and Dumber, so you're saying there's a chance sounds, man.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
As long as it's above like 5%, let's go.
I think it's close to a 25% chance. And I say that because I think there's probably a little bit below 30% chance that he ends up deciding not to come back to Milwaukee long term. And then I think that if he doesn't go back to Milwaukee long term, there's a high percentage chance that he would end up going to Golden State.
I love that so much that I'm just going to change the topic and let that just kind of hang in the air for a second. Connor, we haven't been able to do it with you yet, but over the last few weeks, we've just been enjoying the hell out of The Last Dance, the Jordan documentary. And what we do is just jot down things that caught our eye and then go back through them. And there was one I have here on my notes that literally starts off with, make sure you ask Connor about it. And it's this one. I think it was episode 8. May have been 7, but I think it was episode 8. And it starts off with Jerry Krause being interviewed by an invisible media throng. And it's Craig Sager who opens up and asks him a question about the backstabbing that's going on in the Bulls organization. He's surprised that they're having this much success on the floor despite all the backstabbing off of it. Would you ever ask a question that had the word backstabbing in it? Like, how much balls does it take to drop that question?
Yeah, that was a great they started that episode and I was my mouth was agape because I was just like, that is so incredibly ballsy. I feel like that was that type of question was more likely to happen back then because things like that didn't go viral nearly as easily.
Sure.
We are constantly aware as media members now that if we word something stupidly, especially covering a dynastic team, that we're probably going to go viral, and you don't want to go viral for the wrong reasons. So I've gotten to the point where I think through my question, especially in an interview scrum or press conference, several times before I actually asked it. And the way you worded that was just so epically harsh.
You know, because it was Sager. I mean, he was probably sitting in like a gold shiny suit, not giving a crap. I mean, because he always had swagger like that. Maxime, would you have heart enough to do that? Like, what's your personality type? Would you reach out and say something that aggressive?
I'd like to think I would, but dude, I think there's no chance, especially being around your peers. I don't think I'd be able to live that down. Plus, like, you know, Jerry Krause is like maybe maybe my perception is a little bit skewed because Michael Jordan like persists in making fun of his height, but he seems like he's the smallest GM of all time. So that makes me the most likely to say something like that to him.
I'll take over from there. It looks like he's quickly melting as this documentary goes on, which is not the best of looks.
I feel like he looks like a supervillain, which is perfect given the narrative arc of this documentary, which paints him as a supervillain and paints him as this like really small-minded person who can't handle other people getting attention. It just the optics and the behavior add up.
But let's do be fair at least, which is, you know, this is clearly every single word of this documentary has been okayed by Michael Jordan and his team. And I think we might have gone a little bit too far in the bashing of Jerry Krause. I mean, like, he pulled Kukoc from the second round. Like, he's done a lot of kind of amazing moves.
His looks, Maxine. What are you talking about? He's a Hall of Famer. I called him small-minded.
Come on now.
I thought he just said small.
What is my biggest issue with this documentary, which is, you know, everyone, it's been universal praise for this documentary. I think a lot of that is just because we have nothing else to watch and we're desperate for any sort of sports content. And so we all desperately want to like this documentary. And look, I've fully enjoyed it. I think it's well done in a lot of ways, and I look forward to it every Sunday. But just from like a journalistic perspective, it is so incredibly biased. I mean, it's so clear to me that this whole thing was curated by Michael Jordan. I got on a conference call a couple of weeks before episode one came out with the director and the executive producer, and he talked about how MJ reviewed every single episode and critiqued them before this dropped and told them, hey, you should add more footage from this game and less footage from this game and things like that. And it feels like a legacy piece, and that's really all it feels like to me. It's trying to paint Michael Jordan in the best light possible.
Looking at this documentary from the lens of what wasn't included as opposed to what was, is the tail wagging the dog. Recently, like the U.S. Navy released some images of UFOs, like real UFOs, like for the first time in whatever the hell, forever, forever, forever. And I'm sure they probably have hundreds of thousands of hours of documentary footage of UFOs, and they only gave us a small amount. But that 30 seconds isn't any less compelling because I haven't seen all of it. I'm just excited to see UFOs. Same thing for this documentary, Connor. I'm getting to watch the practices from when he was at Spaceman. I got to watch the 92 Olympic team play against each other. These are like pictures of the Loch Ness Monster for me. So, I mean, I get what you're saying. They probably could have made an even more amazing documentary. But until that next amazing documentary comes along, I'm just on board for this one, man. Like, I don't know. I hear what you're saying, and maybe it's just the 1980s kid in me coming out, but I've been loving
it. You and I had a conversation about this on our walk the other day, and I think you appreciate this just as someone who's a Skyline High School alum, which is also the school that Gary Payton, a.k.a. the club, attended. I think a good example of what we're talking about is when they're talking about that finals between the Sonics and the Bulls. And anyone who watched that finals, it's one of my first NBA memories. I remember watching that finals when I was like 7 years old. And anyone who knows that the entire series shifted when they put Gary Payton on MJ. It took two games. And you look at the numbers that they back it up, that the MJ legitimately struggled with Gary Payton, and then you watch them get to that point in the documentary, and it's very dismissive of that. And you know, they show the interview of MJ watching the video, which was hilarious, by the way, of him laughing at Gary Payton.
And I kept hitting him and banging him and hitting him and banging him. It took a toll on me. And then I feel myself resting him a little bit, and then the series changed. And I wish I could have did it earlier. I don't know if the outcome would have been different, but it was a difference. and beating him down a little bit.
The glove. I had no problem with the glove. I had no problem with Gary Payton.
I had a lot of other things on my mind.
But just as a viewer, your takeaway is, oh, okay, so Gary Payton didn't actually, you know, didn't actually give him any problems, right? But he did. You know, he actually did.
No, of course he did. And even the documentary confirms that. They leave you with the impression that the reason Jordan didn't play well in those two games when Jordan switched him was because he had all these preconceived issues with his dad dying. I mean, he was going through his first finals without his best friend at his side. But then they reveal that Father's Day was game six. They won game six. You know, so the way that they're telling the story, I'm not disagreeing with you that this is biased. I'm sure it is. This dude's controlled his image. I mean, this stuff was all shot in 98. It's 2020. You know, like, he's controlled this for 22 years. The fact that he still has a stranglehold on it isn't a shock. But hey, I'm still on board for it, man. I'm absolutely still enjoying it.
Don't get me wrong, I'm enjoying it a lot. It's just you have to understand what it is. And in my opinion, it's a legacy.
It definitely is. Of course it is.
A piece of journalism necessarily.
No. It's definitely self-serving. MT, I know that we just caught you, and let me bring you in by having you weigh in on a argument that Maxime and I had to start off the pod. If you could add anybody to this Warriors roster starting next year, would it be Giannis or peak level Michael Jordan?
Giannis.
No! Oh my God! It just shows that you guys are both terrible. I don't even want to hear your answer for that. It's ridiculous.
No, the reason why is because Steph, Clay, and Draymond wouldn't have the ball at all. It would just all be centered around Jordan shooting.
If they had 12 Michael Jordans on the team right now, I would add a 13th one instead of Giannis. That's how dedicated I am to this.
Time in that triangle. That was the whole point of the triangle, was they mixed it up.
Let's go. That'll play, Connor. See, Connor had my back. F you. Marcus, yeah. I just want you to disappear.
But again, they mixed it up, and then he had to be coerced and convinced that he should throw it to Paxson, who was open, and he didn't even throw it. Horace Grant had to throw it to Paxson.
He just had to be reminded, and they used it to win. I will not have you, House Jordan. Instead, I'll ask you a far more important question. Boys, does Michael Jordan have the most iconic mustache of all time? And you know, we got Charlie Chaplin, Hitler. There's some other big mustaches out there. But I mean, for my money, I think it's MJ's.
Unfortunately, it has to be Hitler, right? I mean, that mustache is just synonymous with the worst human being to ever live.
Yeah, you're right. Let me shift it then, Connor. When MJ adopted what can only be described then as the Hitler mustache, do you think that he knew that Hitler wore the mustache and he was like, you know what? I am Michael f***ing Jordan. I will rock a Hitler mustache anyways.
We know that MJ is apolitical. So you know, that's been another takeaway from this documentary.
I don't know. I mean, does Michael get the crown over Adam Morrison? Adam Morrison's mustache was legit. You can't
even call that a mustache. That was like a milk stash. That was like, that was bad.
Adam Morrison looked like he painted that on at the beginning of every quarter. Like, not even at the beginning of the game. Like, he went into the hut and was like, how's my mustache? It's looking all right. Let's get some ink on that. Another Last Dance question. If he could, so, you know, they asked him, and let's frame it. Scotty's decision to stay on the bench was a huge portion of one of those last couple episodes. And they asked him about it, and he said for the record that if he had a chance to do it over, he would do the exact same thing. But I don't believe him. I think that if he was actually given that opportunity, there is no way he wouldn't go on the floor. And I'll give you a stupid example. I catch my 5-year-old kid doing things she shouldn't all the time. I bust her out on it. And sometimes there's like a 5 or 10 second period of time where she has a look on her face where she's trying to show that she's right. And she's trying to like have whatever argument it is, why she's doing what she shouldn't be doing. But the look betrays that she knows she was wrong and she shouldn't continue it. Scottie Pippen had that look on his face when his teammates took the floor at the end of that game and he stayed on the bench. He knew it was wrong then, but he had already decided he couldn't go out and he couldn't get back up. So I don't believe him when he says that he would do it differently. Do you guys?
Yeah, I don't believe it either. We're learning that Scotty is incredibly stubborn. But that was just such a bad look. And his teammates said that he expressed remorse at the time. And I believe them. So I think he would redo it. And this hits on another thing that I kind of wanted to talk about, which is just, have you guys been shocked by how poorly this portrays Scottie Pippen in a lot of ways? I mean, it's like a legacy piece for MJ, but then in the process, it's kind of throwing Scottie under the bus in a lot of ways.
No, yeah, I agree with you. No, it doesn't surprise me. And all, you know, if what we've been saying about Jordan is right, that he's looking through all this and he has some idea of the message that he wants to portray, and really it's a legacy piece and he wants to show all the LBJ fans out there who the hell he was, there may be some secondary, because, you know, time has not been super positive to Scottie and MJ's relationship. Scottie's had a couple of nasty things to say about Jordan, you know, well before this documentary came out. So it wouldn't surprise me if Jordan curated some of these episodes and thought to himself, you know what, I'll go ahead and let him look less than optimal here.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think Scottie would do it again if he had the chance. I mean, they, Coach made the shot and they won the game. So, you know, there's that to contend with. But I mean, bigger than that, I thought it was interesting that Rodman came out and said, if LeBron played in the era when Jordan and Pippen were at their peak and they were winning championships, that Scottie Pippen would still be the second best player ever.
Huh.
It's like, you know, I think for Rodman to come to Scottie Pippen's defense like that kind of supports what you're saying, Connor, and that the documentary overall just isn't painting Pippen in a great light. And, you know, I think Rodman even caught on to that. So I think that statement kind of was fueled by that, but it was interesting. I mean, I know Wes probably doesn't agree with it, but, you know, is Scottie Pippen really the second best player ever and was just in Michael Jordan's shadow is a crazy question.
I think that one thing that's interesting about this documentary, and I'm actually writing about this tomorrow, I've talked to several of the younger Warriors players, guys who are in their early to mid 20s. And you know, they didn't grow up with MJ. They grew up with Kobe and LeBron, and this documentary has been an opportunity for them to learn a lot about the nuances and some of the behind the scenes stuff from those years. And for myself, I actually didn't know that story about Scottie Pippen sitting late in that game. I had never heard that before. And I know that that's probably something that's well known from people in your generation, because I'm sure it was a really big deal at the time. But you know, that wasn't like the shot with MJ. That wasn't like the flu game. That wasn't like at that level. And that's something I didn't know. And so it's been interesting, you know, picking up on those tidbits that you think as an NBA historian / fan, I should know, but I just didn't.
I have a question for everybody here. So this footage is supposed to be footage from the final year, the 97-98 season. But so much of what we're learning, and Bram, what you said you loved was some of the Dream Team practice footage. But that wasn't under Michael Jordan's control. You know, like technically that should have already been available to the public. Like, I don't understand, like all the times that we go back and forth, and kind of, I don't know, I have a bone to pick with just how the storytelling isn't linear, but like, I wonder if the fact that they only have footage from, with Michael Jordan's permission, from the 97-98 year, but they need to tell the rest of the story with the other footage. But that footage, you know, like it wasn't like it was under lock and key and Michael Jordan wouldn't let it release. So I don't know. I'm curious why we're just now seeing some of that stuff.
Well, I mean, it had his image in it. I mean, so like theoretically, I guess they could have released it if they had done that like blur out thing, you know? I mean, but really, this is probably a legal question for the NBA's retained attorneys, right? And how that copyright stuff worked.
Yeah, but that's why I think that's a big reason why it is a legacy piece, because, you know, legally he has a right to review everything and have input on the process, which, you know, it is what it is. That's probably how it was always going to have to be. It's not ideal from a journalistic or storytelling perspective, in my opinion, but you know, at the same time, it's also the reason why they got so much access to MJ. You know, he had three really long sit downs with the crew and was as candid and open as he was. I mean, my favorite scene from the entire documentary so far was when he was talking about how he's viewed as a teammate, and he was talking about his competitive drive, and then he started to tear up.
Yeah, that, it was a break. Yeah.
Special.
That's how I played the game. You don't have to if you don't want to. And then he tears up and break.
Look, I don't have to do this. I'm only doing it because it is who I am. That's how I played the game. That was my mentality. If you don't want to play that way, don't play that way. Break.
And I, what I loved about that scene, so I feel like two things are happening, at least as far as MJ as a person for this documentary for me. One is it's solidifying all of these stories we've heard for years about how he's a psychopathic winner, right? And, you know, it's left and right. The George Carl not talking to him, the Bradshaw, you know, that story that he made up, the good game Mike. I mean, we're hearing real world examples of why he has always been considered this maniac. But on the other side, I'm learning, I think, who Jordan is as a person now, not as a championship leader, but as a human being years later, looking back on his career. And he seems somewhat likable. And that scene you're talking about, Connor, is when those two things met each other. Because Jordan now, looking back at Jordan, the leader champion, doesn't seem to be super proud of how he handled it. I don't think he'd change it. I think he would tell you that it was necessary. But that tear tells a lot, man. It tells a shit ton. And in fact, let me ask you guys, would you, and be honest, would you want to be Jordan's teammate? Because I don't think I would be. You know, like if I've showed my personality on this podcast, I'm crazy. There's self-loathing within me. You know, like I can take things really hard. I understand the success that would come with it. I understand, you know, I'd be an immortal. I'd be in one of these documentaries. But I'd also be signing myself up for just getting destroyed by this dude on a daily basis. And I don't know if I can handle it. Could you guys, would you want to be Jordan's teammate?
I don't know if I could handle it, but I definitely would want to try. I feel like that's such an incredible learning opportunity.
You guys all agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things where you might not enjoy it at the time, but 10, 15, 20 years later, you look back on playing with MJ, and it's one of your fondest, most memorable memories ever in your entire life.
Do you think if they ask Scotty Burrell, they're like, hey, all those times he called you a bitch ass hoe, one of the best memories you've ever had? Do you think that was like, yep.
Our boy Mark Medina actually wrote about that yesterday. He caught up with Scott Burrell and asked him like how he looks back on those times with MJ. And he said that he looks back on them fondly, which I believe, you know, like you probably hated it at the time, but you know what? If you're going to get bitched out by anyone, you got pitched up by the greatest player in NBA history. That's pretty darn cool.
Do you guys remember the scene from episode one when they're in France preseason, they win that meaningless game, and one of Jordan's teammates hugs Ron Harper and then looks to Jordan and says, hey, it's my first championship. Let's celebrate. And Jordan gives him a look like, fuck no. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah. Yep.
That teammate was Scott Burrell. You know, and like, so they set up that he was S-housing that fool right from the beginning.
You remember in like the first or second episode, they're on the plane and it was our first time seeing Scott Burrell in the documentary. And he's just putting him on blast and just saying, talking about how much of a womanizer and male slut Scott Burrell is. And Scott Burrell's like really concerned and you can see him freaking out. And he's like, hey, my mom might watch this. Michael, can you please stop? You know, that's not cool. And MJ just does not care. Like that, it was a good introduction into their dynamic.
Jordan stops talking to Scott when Scott says, don't say this on camera, and turns to the camera and says it just directly to the camera. Like, oh, not only will I say this, I am now talking directly to your mom, Scotty, so you can go ahead and enjoy that. And as far as favorite scenes, because I love that one you talked about, Connor, my favorite one now is the scene of Michael Jordan calmly and slowly swinging a baseball bat while smoking a cigar and plotting BJ Armstrong's sporting death. That was just everything that we've learned about him, and just watching it come to fruition in that scene was chilling. It was just badass.
Well, that's all right. Let's see if all that trash talking starts when it's 0-0 instead of 5-6 point lead. That's where it starts. That's the sign of a good man. If you can talk shit when it's even score, or talk shit when you're behind score, when you're ahead, it's easy to talk.
Yeah, it was mean too. I mean, it was just like, this dude helped you win championships, and he was in there like, he was just plotting on killing him. He's like, you know better, BJ, than to ever disrespect me like that. Like, okay. Like, and it was cold. I mean, I think that just shows the killer mentality that Jordan had. And I think one of the reasons why he stands out a little bit above LeBron to me is just because he had that, and LeBron to me doesn't.
But of course, when Jordan lost in the playoffs, when he came back to Orlando, right? So, I mean, think about that. He came back, 15 games left, destroyed himself to get the team into the playoffs, does everything he can to try to help him get over the hump. They lose in Orlando, and then we get a shot of Tim Grover, his trainer, saying, hey, I know you like to take time off after the season. You let me know as much time as you want, and then we'll hook up. And Jordan says, I'll see you tomorrow. Counterbalance that with LeBron James losing to Golden State in the finals and showing up at the press conference with a f***ing cast on his hand. You know, I mean, and I'm sure that the injury was the same, but if that's what we're doing, if we're using this to compare their legacies, those two bullet points are part of that legacy. Here's another silly question. Were the glasses that Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner of the Bulls in 1993, the largest glasses that anyone has ever put on a human face? Like, I bet you they had like jokey glasses they put on like a horse or something, so they were hella big. But I feel like Reinsdorf has the largest pair of human glasses. Am I wrong?
I think you're right. Reinsdorf has been a really good foil for this documentary. Every good story, whether written or on TV, needs conflict, and he's been a good villain for this documentary in a lot of ways. And I find it fascinating because it was everything was just so on the surface in terms of their issues. Like, especially in the social media age, you never see people talking as openly about those types of issues. But like, they were, you know, in media scrums talking about how they hated Reinsdorf and stuff, like, and how they hated
Krause. You're talking about Krause. You're talking about the GM.
So I get them confused. I apologize.
Well, it's the same first name. No, and you're right. It's the perfect juxtaposition. And he does. He helps move the story along. Let me. This is a random conversational whiplash question, but Connor, I know that you know about sports, so I feel like you're the best person to throw it towards. Why was Michael Jordan's first baseball workout inside a gymnasium? Like, you'd think like they'd be on a field or something. Like, why the hell were they literally on a basketball court practicing baseball?
It was probably raining that day.
Well, then just call it. I mean, were they wearing cleats in there? It seemed a little discombobulated.
Smoother transition. It's for a transition.
They'll practice indoors if it's raining.
Last question. Is this making you guys like or dislike Michael Jordan more as a person, not as a player?
That's a tough question. I think for me, it's making me like him more because I'm seeing more the reasons behind things. I'm seeing more why he was such a crazy person. What the motivating factors were. Stuff about his relationship with his dad has been really interesting, and just how that impacted him. I do think that the documentary could do a better job of painting that even clearer. Like we said the other day, we still haven't seen his wife or his kids really at all in the documentary. I'd like a little bit fuller picture, but it definitely has moved the needle for me in that department. So it humanizes him in a way that I hadn't seen before. And anytime someone's humanity comes through, you're going to appreciate them more and like them more because you can understand their faults.
Yeah, for me, it doesn't really change how much I like him. It just makes me respect his impact on the game in a different way. I mean, I already thought that he was the best player ever, and you know, I thought that his impact on the sport of basketball was unmatched. But it just is further solidifying that. Just, you know, and he was one of the first celebrities, you know, in this generation or my generation that kind of dealt with celebrity the way that he did. Like, I think there's some big athletes nowadays that, you know, rival that, like, you know, a Messi or Ronaldo probably worldwide would have those same things, maybe even a Kobe. But, you know, like Michael Jordan went into the fishbowl before anybody else had done it, you know, and that celebrity and stardom just took a toll on him. You could just tell, like, it just hit him in a completely different way that nobody kind of respected and expected. So, you know, like, I think as a competitor and as a basketball player, he is a maniac, but I don't like him any less or more, to Connor's point, because we don't really get too much of it. Like, I liked him a little bit more when I saw him having fun on North Carolina's campus and realizing he was there for another 2 years after his freshman year. And I was like, oh man, he's like a kid. Like, I related to him. But other than that, like, he's just this uber competitive person that I don't know too much about. Like, I knew about his dad and I knew about some of the off court gambling stuff. So it's not like a surprise where it changes. It just kind of reinforces what I always thought.
Your points on his personality stick out to me for two reasons. One, watching rookie Michael Jordan as compared to 98 Michael Jordan is like watching Peter Parker versus Spider-Man. You know, I mean, he just completely transformed. He's a super version of what he used to be. But the other thing that really stuck out to me, and it backs what you're saying, the pressure that comes with superstardom. The times we see Michael Jordan having fun are twice. Once when he's in North Carolina a little bit before superstardom hits him. And then again, a really quick shot when he's playing around with his teammates in baseball, because he's not a goddamn superstar in baseball. You know, he just gets to be one of the dudes. So that it really backs this conception of who we are seeing has been created by the crucible of tension, not necessarily by the crucible of personality. Maxime, you're last up here, man. What do you think? Do you like him more or less? How's this impacted you?
Yeah, I mean, the reason that I hesitated and then was nodding when Connor said it's a difficult question is because I feel like we've gotten the curtain lifted on 1990s Michael Jordan, and that sort of is in stark juxtaposition to who the, like, bloodshot-eyed, kind of overweight Michael Jordan sitting in the chair is today. And so it's like, it's confusing for me because everything that we're seeing, it's like, oh, cool, he was a human being, like, he was a maniac, he was hyper-competitive, and that all just further solidifies my understanding of who Jordan the player was. But right. I'm disappointed that, I mean, quite frankly, I'm disappointed that he didn't spend a little bit more time lamenting not supporting Harvey Gantt over Jesse Helms in that election. And, like, to me, that's just like, what I want to see in any story is character growth. And the thing that is not changing for me is the fact that he was a dominant basketball player. So there's no way that character could grow because it's already, he's God on the court. And so, like, I wanted to see some personal growth. And what I saw was almost a regression in that, like, dude, you've had 22 years, well, not 22 years, but you've had a long time, maybe even 30, to think about this. And you're still unable to say anything indicating that, like, that was a mistake. And, like, let's be real, that was a mistake. Like, he absolutely should have been supporting Harvey Gantt.
As we get to learn more and more about Jesse Helms, the guy who Harvey Grant was against, he was David Duke. I mean, so there's a take at the end, and I'd love your guys' opinion on it. But they have, after Jesse Helms wins, he says something along the lines of, there's no joy in Mudville tonight, you know, referencing the Casey at bat take. And maybe it was just a North Carolina take, or maybe it was the most goddamn racist thing I've ever heard anybody say into a microphone, you know. And if it was the latter, even just by implication, then yeah, man, the Republicans buy shoes too has a whole different feel on it. If it, you know, if he said it in context of not combating that in particular piece of shit. I take it by your guys' silence, you agree. And I know I keep saying this is the last thing, and my apologies, but I also at least want to get this out of my notes and into the microphone. We got a sense of his relationship with his father, and a couple of things stuck out. One, you know, obviously how deep the relationship was and how immensely, impossibly difficult it would be to be trying to wrap your head around the loss of your father, your best friend. And while you're doing that, suddenly, publicly, you're being blamed for his death. That your gambling or anything may have led to these indiscretions. I just can't, like, I couldn't imagine. I couldn't fathom it. I would never, ever forgive the people who said it to the media. I would never trust the media again. You know, it would just be such a disgusting blight on them. And then secondly, and this is more tongue-in-cheek, Jordan casually mentions that his dad became a much larger influence in his life after his third suspension in school. And I just couldn't help but thinking, one, I was impressed that Jordan got suspended three times. Two, I kind of liked that Jordan's dad the first two times was like, ah, f- it, he'll figure it out. They're like, it's all good. And the third time is like, all right, I gotta go talk to this kid. You know, it was number three that really lit him up. Have you guys ever been suspended in going through school? Or did anybody ever ask you, hey, go ahead and don't come back the next couple of days?
No, I did go to the principal's office at once a year in first through fifth grade. And every time, the only reason that it bummed me out is because I knew that my dad was going to absolutely murder me when I got home.
I tried to impress a guy named Sean Anderson in eighth grade band class. And by impress, I mean, I just didn't want to get my ass kicked by Sean Anderson. And he had a bunch of jumping jacks. They're the type of fireworks that if you light off, they obviously set on fire and then jump up and down in different colors. And I set one of those off in band class. And strangely, the school didn't take it that well. They asked me to take a couple of days. Connor, MT, you guys, any nasty indiscretions in your past? I would have, if I had to guess, I'd say no for both of you. Am I right?
I'm trying to think. I got in trouble at school, but I don't think I ever got actually suspended. I had other, you know, like detentions and things like that, but I don't think I ever got suspended.
No Sean Andersons in your life. That's good, man.
I remember my best friend, my best friend to this day in life, got expelled from seventh grade at our school for wearing a System of a Down shirt on free dress day.
Would you like go to like the school of the Third Reich or something? What are you talking about?
No, it was like uber Christian Catholic school. And there were like other rumors floating around about him that weren't even true. And they had no proof of, and then they ended up expelling him. And when his mom asked, why are you expelling my son? The principal told her, your son is a moral detriment to our campus.
Holy shit.
And to this day, he's literally one of my best friends in life. And we talk about it all the time. And it was like kind of a defining moment in his entire life. So
I like this guy. I like him a lot. We need to get him on the pod. MT, did you ever get kicked out?
Close. And I should have been fifth grade. I had my new guest or Jabot shirt on, which was nice. All the rage then. We're playing basketball and somebody grabbed me by the neck of it and like stretched it out. Mm. And everybody else who was watching gave the whole ooh, and they formed a circle around us immediately. And it was like, well, I guess you got to fight now.
Was that a nightmare? Did you want to fight?
Oh, no, I didn't want to fight.
Yes, the last thing I want.
I just
want
to play basketball. And then exactly. I'm in the middle of a pseudo elementary octagon. And I was like, oh my goodness.
And so, you have to pretend like you do want to fight, but you don't. You just want to get the hell out of there.
Yeah. So we fought. It wasn't a great fight at all. I probably got in two punches at most. I'm in the principal's office getting ready to face my impending doom. Like Maxime, I know my dad's going to bring the thunder and pain. And for some reason, the principal at the time was a principal of two elementary schools covering for another one. And he wasn't at my elementary school that day. And for... Wow. whatever reason, you're not allowed to get suspended if he wasn't there. So I couldn't get suspended. I had to go. Dwayne, our basketball coach, came and got me, and I had to run around Montclair Park a ton of times as punishment for it.
When I got suspended, they suspended me for 2 days. My parents were out of town. I was staying with my grandparents. And I mean, you know, I don't know if you guys ever do this, but look back on things you've done in your life and just cringe, like, my God, dude, why would you do that? So I lied to them. And I don't even remember the lie. It was something that was so ridiculous. You know, like, oh, they said that you've been so good at school on Monday, you don't have to come to school on Tuesday and Wednesday. Like, just the most ridiculous of stories. Of course they knew I was lying. And then when my parents came back, they're like, so obviously something happened and you're completely full of shit. We're going to have to talk about that. But I digress, boys. Huge.
Got one more thing just from the documentary. Sorry to join late, but one of the things that I love about the documentary is that it brings up stories from other people outside of the documentary. It gives them kind of permission and to tell them. And there's one that came from a soccer player who said that Michael Jordan, a few of the players on the Bulls team, and Samuel Jackson all wanted to play golf one time. And it was at a resort that you needed a membership. This guy was a player, Gary Lineker, had a membership, and he needed one of his friends to come play and join so they could go on there eight deep. So they get there, they're getting ready to play. Michael and all his teammates are there. Samuel Jackson's there, which is funny too. But one of the guys looks at Michael Jordan and says, so, I know you like to bet. Would you like to make a little wager on it? And Michael says, sure. And he says, so how much would you like to play for? And they said, Michael puffs on his cigar, looks straight at him, smiles, and says, whatever makes you feel uncomfortable.
Let's go.
And I was like, that is perfect. Like, that is the Michael Jordan we're seeing in The Last Dance. And I love that that story comes out because of the documentary.
I love that. You know what I don't like about some of the gambling stories? There's an insinuation, and I guess this makes perfect sense, but I just don't occupy the tax bracket who would ever think about it. But there's these looming nasty sharks out there who look for celebrities like Jordan, know that he's uber competitive, know that he likes to gamble, and then try to get in his life to try to get money out of him, right? I mean, we had those insinuations in earlier episodes that Jordan was involved, his name was involved in lawsuits, that he ended up owing money to other people. And I just don't like the idea that Jordan was ever the victim of a game. You know what I mean? Like, that's not how I want to look back on his legacy. Okay, I am finally going to wrap this, and I'm going to wrap it by saying what I always do with you, Connor. You kicked ass. You always kick ass. I'm not the only one thinking it. Tell us where we can find more Letourneau work so that we can continue to enjoy that.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at @con_cron. Read all my stuff at SF Chronicle. I also have my own podcast. Warriors Off Court. Chris Mullen's coming on this week to talk about The Last Dance.
Nice.
And, so give that a listen.
Badass. And we saw Chris Mullen's bald head at the end of episode 8, right when they're tipping the ball and Reggie Miller saying, I thought I was going to end Jordan's career. And it was bittersweet because I love seeing Mully, but I hate seeing him in that Pacers uniform. It's always kind of a weird deal. From our side, you want to reach out and say that I'm crazy to pick Jordan over Giannis, that Marcus, Maxime, or Connor and I dropped the ball or said something worth listening to, hit us up, warriorshuddle@gmail.com, Twitter account @warriorshuddle. We're also on Patreon, but for now, all of that is suspended in these weirdo times. With that in mind, go Warriors, and hopefully we'll see you real soon.
Good.
And just because I'm a rule player, Kevin Durant, thank you so much for naming us your favorite podcast.
And we're out.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.